Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and again, we will take President Obama's live statement expected at 11:30, so that's just in a few minutes, so we're going to have to shorten this planned conversation with our next guest, Jason Luck. Now, Lusk. Now, if you think Mark Bittman and Michael Pollan are the problem with food in this country, if you think Michael Bloomberg's trans fats ban is fascist, and you oppose the healthy school meal funding and Michelle Obama's Get Fit campaign, my next guest is your man. Jason Lusk is a food economist at Oklahoma State University and author now, of a book called The Food Police, a well-fed manifesto about the politics of your plate. Professor Lusk, welcome to WNYC, and I'll warn you right off the bat of my extreme skepticism of your basic position and apologize that our originally scheduled time has been shortened by the events in Boston. But why this phrase, the food police?
Well, I'm writing this book really in response to people that I like to think of as sort of the backseat drivers when it comes to food. And really what I'm trying to advocate in this book is a return to science-based, evidence-based policy and decision-making. And unfortunately, when I see a lot of the policies that are being offered out there, the research, both the science and the economic research, just suggests they're not going to have the kind of benefits people are claiming.
But your book is largely a sarcastic plea for government to lay off the processed food industry. Is this the heart of your manifesto on page 58 of your book? Let us not yield to the demands of the food police, but anxiously await what more the technological innovators have to offer.
So, yeah, partly this is a defense of individual decision making. Ultimately, we are responsible for our own choices. But I'm not advocating people eat unhealthily. That's not what I'm arguing at all. What I am arguing is a lot of the technological improvements that have happened over time have actually been quite good for people. And I'm trying to remind people of some of the benefits of those technological innovations and remind people that there's a lot of good that's actually come from the changes we've seen in food over the last 50 years.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of good that comes from technological innovations. But to take another example from your book about Mayor Bloomberg's trans fats ban, you write, "Try a donut the next time you're in New York City or Philadelphia. Not as tasty as it used to be, is it? For this, we can thank the food police and their war on trans fats. And what a service it has been. We should be grateful to have been taught the shocking truth that too many Oreos and donuts are unhealthy."
Right. And so if you'll actually look at the whole list of things that follow that particular quote you pulled out, you'll see it's not just that example, but many. And I follow that by saying, you know, any one of these in particular might not seem like a terribly bad idea, but taken together, they do sort of suggest this mentality that's we have a small group of people that are advocating for policies that the economics and the research seems to suggest are not going to create the kind of benefits that are being promoted. So we've created a misleading cult, I think, in my mind, a misleading perspective about the state of food and agriculture in this country.
I do occasionally eat a donut, and I haven't noticed that they don't taste like donuts. So I encourage you to try one while you're in town. But do you think whatever difference in taste donuts might have today in New York City is a greater public good than the ban on restaurant trans fats? Do you disbelieve the science about trans fats and heart disease?
No, but what I am saying is that there is more to life than nutrition. So it's not just is a donut unhealthy. I think most of us know that. The question is, what are the economic impacts of these bans, both on the consumers, on the producers, and the rest of the people involved in the food supply chain? And I think when you start looking at that kind of evidence, it's a lot more mixed. Look at a country like Denmark, for example, that passed a ban on saturated fats. And what they did is they ended up repealing their ban a year later because of the outlash, pushback from consumers, producers. And when you do something like ban saturated fat or tax saturated fat, you're also taxing a lot of healthy things like certain nuts, avocados. So there are all kinds of unintended consequences that people that are offering sort of feel-good policies don't anticipate and that we need to be taking into consideration.
Have you read another new book that is out called Salt, Sugar, Fat by Michael Moss?
Yes, I'm aware of it.
Because he uses the example of Finland, where apparently researchers determined, and I'm looking for that excerpt, which I was going to read to you from one of his articles, and I'm not coming up with it right now, but in Finland, where apparently they found in the 1970s that a lot of additional salt in the diet was causing a spike in male cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure. And they decided to put big warning labels on things that said high salt content. And sure enough, the salt intake went down and the disease levels went down. So is Finland a good example of the opposite of what you're talking about?
Well, here's a perfect example. Actually, if you look at the research evidence on whether reduced sodium intake actually lowers heart disease and a lot of these things, it's actually very shaky. There's actually quite a lot of evidence to suggest that those kind of sodium reductions don't have any benefits. And that's exactly the thing I'm pointing out. I'm trying to get us to return to science-based evidence. There are several studies. Some studies have been showing that reduced sodium intake increases the chances of death among many people. And so it's this kind of overwrought paranoia about particular food ingredients that I'm trying to hedge against. People pay attention to the bad news and they don't pay attention to anything that conflicts with their prior held beliefs.
As a general matter, do you not think that science shows us that increasing quantities of salt, sugar, and fat taken as a group and increasing over time is bad for public health?
So you mentioned salt, and I can give you several references of studies that sort of conflict the argument that you're making. Sure, it's unhealthy to eat too much fat, too much sugar. No, I'm not arguing people eat unhealthily. But at the end of the day, who's responsible for people's decision-making? And if you actually read Michael Moss's book, one of the last things he says, very last chapter at the end, what he says is, despite all he says about those food companies, he says it's ultimately the consumers who have the wallet and can make changes. And that's one of the arguments I'm making here, too. I'm not advocating on behalf of food companies. But so let me finish this.
But let me ask you if you are advocating on behalf of food companies. And I apologize again that this is going to be cut short pretty soon by President Obama's statement on Boston. And my guest is Jason Lusk, author of The Food Police. But I come at this partly as a parent. And my wife and I feel we're in constant competition with the processed food industry to keep our teenage son eating relatively healthily. We eat healthy at home, but whenever he's out on his own, the industry tempts him at every turn. That's what our dominant storefront America has become, like a fairway at the state fair during every commute. The chips and the fries and the cookies and the Gatorade. And, he, like many other kids, often succumbs. So I feel like we're fighting the corporations trying to destroy our son's health for a buck. And it's not as much a matter of simple, we control the ultimate choice, he controls the ultimate choice, because there's a whole environment of constant temptation and foods created to encourage constant craving for more and more and more of those unhealthy foods. That's the environment we're living in, isn't it?
So I've got two elementary school age children at home too. I care passionately about their health. And for you to tell me that some nutritionist at Harvard or New York City cares more about my children's health is quite frankly absurd. And those food companies you mentioned, they will sell you anything that you're willing to buy. And if you walk in any grocery store, you'll find low fat, high fiber, enriched. You'll go into any fast food restaurant.
You can go in
McDonald's. You can buy a number 7 or number 10 and get a wrap or a salad. I mean, the reality is these companies will sell you anything that you're willing to buy. And if you're looking for blame here, I think we do have to look at our own choices. And the research I've done, when I ask Americans who they think is to blame for the rise in obesity, and I ask them about fast food companies, restaurants, et cetera, 80% of Americans say that individuals are to blame for the rise in obesity.
And I'm going to have to cut you off now and go to President Obama. Thank you very much for having this conversation.
I really appreciate it.